Sustaining It Live with Rita Steele on 95BFM.
No, it isn't. It's a special edition. We have Nabil Zubairi. Is that how you say that, mate?
Zubairi.
Zubairi. Yes. Right on. Hey, thanks for joining us here. We're chatting consumption of music.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Hey, awesome.
Now, Nabil, you are one of the esteemed speakers at an event which is taking place tomorrow night all over Auckland at various bars called Raising the Bar, put on by the University of Auckland. Now, you're down at, here we go, you're at Everybody's at 7 Fort Lane tomorrow night at 8 p.m. right there in the heart of Auckland City. And yeah, you're talking music consumption, and are we really in a paradigm shift when it comes to listening to recorded music? Tell us about your area of research.
Right, so I basically work in media and communication studies, but I study popular music in particular. And most of what I do in terms of my research is really about issues of kind of national culture, race and ethnicity in relation to popular music. Mm. And by popular music, that's quite diverse, but it can be about hip hop, electronic music, rock and pop, and so on.
Top 40, though, is that sort of?
Top 42. Yeah. The history of popular music, but through the media, really. So
I see.
That's my research area, and part of that is, involved in my teaching as well. So I teach a couple of undergraduate courses, one called Popular Music on Screen. So that's about the audiovisual, really, how music has been connected to the image from cinema to, TikTok videos all the way through, and different forms of combination of music and image. And the other course that I teach, which is actually more closely related to what I'm going to be talking about tomorrow, is a course called Recorded Music and Media Formats. So that tries to give students a sense of how music industries evolved alongside other media industries, the kind of technologies of playback in particular, recording, but mainly playback, how people have listened to music and the cultures of listening, and how all those three things, industry, technology, and culture are kind of related. So my talk tomorrow is kind of thinking about what's happening now and trying to think, well, are we actually going through this massive change, as many scholars in my field are saying, or should we look a little bit at the kind of longer picture and think, well, maybe things aren't completely new, that there is a kind of longer, slower evolution of the way that we've listened that might be happening.
How so?
Well, at the moment, right now, there's a lot of debate about streaming and digital music, and particularly debates around Spotify and what's called lean-back listening, that algorithms are shaping the way we listen more. On these platforms like Spotify, like Apple Music, and so on, the recommendation systems, and so on, that your listening is being directed more. Mm. So, anxieties about technology taking over from the balance shifting between technologies and human beings in terms of their agency over listening.
So
I'm going to kind of look at some of that and some of the debates on what's happening with that, with kind of the role of what the effect is on different kinds of musical forms themselves. Are we listening to shorter pieces of music? Mm. What's happening with things like the single and the album, or what's happening with audio-visual music, with music video?
Mm.
Is the duration of those things changing? Are we doing more of that or less of that? So I don't want to give everything away.
No, fair enough.
But but I'm kind of raising a few questions, and I'm actually curious to see what the kind of diversity of listening actually that still goes on, you know, even though we're told that it's mainly Spotify or Apple Music on our phones, that people are still listening in quite diverse and varied ways, you know.
It does seem, with sort of music consumption, that there seems a format that comes around, you know, every decade or so, that everyone gets freaked out about, you know, tape to vinyl to CD, you know, or sorry, CD to tape to, you know, vinyl to tape to CD.
To mini disc.
It's always something that everyone's sort of freaking out at. I watched an interesting video of the tape industry when people started taping things off the radio, and how they sort of dealt with that, how the music industry dealt with that, was sort of a levy on blank tapes. So it's kind of interesting, you know, we sort of adapt as we go. There doesn't seem like there's anyone's got like a broad plan. It's just the technology sort of dictates the way things go, and how we deal with it is how we deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, I recall like when I used to tape or record albums, LP records, you know, vinyl records onto cassette tape.
Yeah, right.
And the inner sleeves of records would have a skull and crossbones with a big slogan, "Home taping is killing music."
Right.
So I think you're right. You know, we had similar kind of anxieties when downloading appeared as well. Mm. I think there is a tendency, though, I mean, also that we overemphasize the new technologies, that they change everything.
Mm, right.
And actually kind of habits of listening are a bit more sedimented, you know, they're a bit more kind of layered, and we do things not that differently to previous generations in many cases. Mm. Even though, you know, new technologies may seem very novel, they're actually quite closely linked in many ways to previous technologies.
Mm.
So I'm trying to kind of work through the hyperbole about this, you know. Right. Obviously IT companies and people who create the new technologies are going to say everything changes, it's all new, it's all you know, brave new world, but actually you know, it's not necessarily that new. And the new technologies are not always that good either.
That's a good point. I mean, look at the vinyl sales at the moment have overtaken CDs. So there is something tactile there where we enjoy the process, it would seem.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a whole... I mean, people are talking now about what's called post-digital culture. So that means it's not like after the digital, but that it's... We're so embedded in digital culture now that we kind of see the limitations of it as well, and what maybe are the pleasures of the analog or previous media forms and kind of habits and practices. So yeah, vinyl records, you know, old media are still kind of quite important, you know, and even for young people, not just for old folks like myself.
No, totally.
Now, with algorithms appearing to shape our taste in music, I've found tools like Spotify and, you know, suggestions on YouTube and SoundCloud to be very helpful. And I wouldn't always say that they are steering me down the same path. I'm very surprised at some of the variety that pops up. What's the general consensus about the algorithm?
I guess it depends.
Do you think it's a positive or a negative?
It must depends on the writer of the algorithm, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. I mean, a lot of what I'm reading at the moment in terms of scholars who work on media technologies and music is anxieties about how, you know, that these forms of artificial intelligence, in a way, the algorithms are shaping our listening or directing us. So they do kind of know us quite well, but there's also a kind of version of us being produced by the technology as well.
Mm.
So I don't know. I mean, I kind of feel ambivalent about it. On the one hand, yeah, it's great. It kind of alerts you to new things and unexpected things as well. And you know, new forms, new music that you didn't know, that's unpredictable. But also, at times, I do feel it's leading me towards listening only in a certain direction. Like a few months ago, I was kind of, I mean, I haven't been on Spotify that long, but for about a year and a half, and I kind of noticed myself being directed to kind of 1979, 80 music, you know.
Not only
was it a kind of question of nostalgia and I was trying to remember my teenage years or anything, but I kind of could feel this pull. So I don't think there's a necessary consensus, but there is quite a lot of worry. And I think it's the same thing that you're having in debates about social media as well.
Yeah, like that, especially when you
there's
start
a version of us being produced by those that's kind of directing us to produce a version of the self on those platforms.
When you apply like a political sort of eye on these sorts of things, that's when it starts getting a little bit hairy. Like, am I being steered in a certain direction? And that can happen in your music as much as it can happen in anything else, I guess. Did you ever muck around with Pandora when that was around? I used to really love their algorithms. And then I found out...
No, I never used Pandora, no.
Right. I found out...
No, it's probably just YouTube, which is, I think, still the most popular platform in terms of kind of algorithms.
I do like a YouTube rabbit hole. I always find that you end up in sort of Japanese funk, 70s funk. But Pandora, I found, was fantastic, and... What I learned was the people sort of writing the code, so to speak, were actual musicians. So they were writing it on a like, you know, what key is the song in, all that kind of stuff, which is quite an in-depth sort of angle to go about it. And it really took me on some really interesting journeys.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's variation in those companies in terms of how humanly created they are. Mm. And, like, I mean, all algorithms are humanly created, obviously, but the kind of levels of automation and intervention by human beings, you know, and taste makers. So, you know, in some ways, though these things are new, they're also not that dissimilar in many ways from music journalists telling you and music papers telling you what to do, or radio
or
DJs.
Us. Yeah, we curate. I feel like we curate the internet for our listeners, really. That's what feels like our job is, and in a sense, Spotify's probably doing the same thing, but it's not as rad. It's not as funny jokes.
Yeah, I mean, the broader political issue of, like, how they're collecting information, and in effect, we are the commodity, right?
Yeah, gets hairy, doesn't it?
Case with Facebook, with Instagram, with all of these platforms, you know. That's a broader issue, about kind of how they're collecting our feelings, you know, because music is such a kind of strongly emotionally invested field of activity, right? People are making playlists, they're listening to playlists for moods and activities, and
that's what music's for, yeah.
Monetizing my emotion.
It's emotion,
from
it
day
is emotion.
To day,
yeah.
Those are monetized, yeah. And so you're getting advertising that is a you know, that's also tied into your music tastes, and your music tastes defined increasingly by mood. So there's interesting stuff being done all around the world, really, on how people are using playlists and how playlists are being kind of pushed by these platforms as well. Maybe that kind of mood management is a little bit like Muzak from... You know, back in the day when the Muzak Corporation used to generate musical compilations to help industry and factories and offices work more efficiently.
Right, keep the BPM up, eh? Nabil, your chat, which is called "Play It Again, Samsung." Is that everybody's from 8 p.m. tomorrow, I believe? Yep.
That's right.
Right on.
If people want to RSVP, which is strongly recommended, you can head to RTB.
Raising the Bar.
rtbevent.com. Yeah, just Google search Raising the Bar and you can find Nabil there.
We should also say you can find Nabil on Bass FM. When's your show on Bass, mate?
Actually, Monday's 8 to 10, so I'll be going down there in an hour and a half or so. Yeah, perfect. Monday's 8 to 10.
Very nice.
106.7 FM, 107.3 FM, Freeview 71.
Right on.
And on the website, Bass FM, and there's an app as well.
Easy peasy. Cool as, mate. Nice to chat to you. Have a brilliant talk, and keep up the good work.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Ka pai.
Thank
take
you both. Yeah.
That was Sustainin' Alive on 95 BFM.